This is the After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the After Party Live. It's a good Mark Thompson show today. Something we forgot to mention, the Mark Thompson Show subscribers, I was just told, up to 29,000. That means we're really close to 30,000 subscribers on the Mark Thompson Show, and that's really exciting. So when it gets to 30,000, I think we're going to have a little celebration. I don't know what kind yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for being here on the After Party Live. Oop, turned my music down too much. There it is. Got to have a little music. No, it's gone. All right. Anyway, thank you for being here on the After Party Live. I appreciate you hanging out with me for this last, 45 minutes to an hour here on YouTube. Thank you for everyone who's contributed to the show. Just so grateful for your support. I can't tell you how much I appreciate stuff like this. Harry, $5. Let's get the fabulous Friday party started. Indeed, let's get it started. I do have so many animal stories for you, but let's start with this wild story. In all my life, I've never heard of such a thing. This is, I mean, I don't want to say it's crazy. The people involved are not crazy, okay? But because they know this is happening. So it's not like someone who's, and I don't want to call anybody crazy. Let me reel that back. But this is when sometimes when people see things, they have something going on in their mind, right? That is not functioning correctly. In this particular case, the people know that what they're seeing is not what they should be seeing. And I don't know if this happened to me. Wow. So there's this disease or syndrome, and it causes people to see distorted like demon faces. It's a rare neurological disorder. Can you imagine walking around through life and every live person, every face that you look at, I guess, or dead person too, alive or dead, doesn't matter. You see this stretched out mouth and stretched out eyes and pointy ears. Man, this man's name is Victor Shera, the latest person to suffer from this. And his case is being featured in a new study that is being published in the medical journal, The Lancet. And he woke up one day in November of 2020, and he thought, I am in some sort of demonic world. This cannot be happening. He said when he looked at people's faces, they appeared to be demon-like. Their ears, noses, and mouths stretched, deep grooves in their foreheads, cheeks, and chins as well. He said it was really scary. This guy's 59. He's from Tennessee. He said what he was actually seeing were distortions caused by an incredibly rare neurological disorder known as prosopometamorphosia, or they call it PMO. When he looks at a phone or a computer screen, the faces look normal. But when he looks at a person in real life, they look all kinds of jacked up and demonic. It gave scientists this opportunity to study his condition. And that's the results of the study published in The Lancet. For the very first time, researchers say they were able to create rare PMO distortions in the form of pictures because he can see online what's normal versus what isn't normal. As the patient reported no distortion when viewing facial images on screen or on paper, we asked him to compare an in-person face to a photograph of the face taken in the same room under identical lighting conditions. By alternating between observing the in-person face, perceived as distorted, and the photo on the computer screen, perceived as undistorted, he provided real-time feedback on the perceived differences. And then they used image editing software to modify each photo until it matched what he saw in his in-person description. This is so rare. There are only fewer than 100 published case reports of PMO. And doctors, scientists, they don't understand what triggers this to happen. They think it's caused by maybe some kind of dysfunction in the brain network that handles facial processing. And not every case is the same either. Some people report seeing people with droopy or offset eyes. Others report seeing witch-like features. A person experiencing hallucinations due to a mental disorder, different than someone with PMO, because again, with PMO, the person is aware that what they're seeing is distortion, and what they're seeing, maybe some people say there's something wrong with my vision, right? People with other disorders think there's something out to get them or something wrong with the world, and things they're seeing are wrong, but they don't understand that. In PMO, you know what you're seeing is wrong. You get it. Wild. The researchers in this case say there might be two possible triggers in particularly this case of Mr. Shera. The first, he had carbon monoxide poisoning 4 months before the PMO symptoms started. The second, he was significantly injured. He had a head injury 15 years ago, smacked his head on some concrete. MRI scans showed a lesion on the left side of his brain because of it. He also did have a history of bipolar disorder and PTSD, according to this study. So they're looking at everything. They don't know. Usually, PMO symptoms resolve after a few days or weeks. They can linger for years. And Mr. Shera says this started in 2020. We're at 2024, and he is still seeing demonic faces. How does he cope with it? Well, and he lives with a roommate and her two kids. He says that's been really helpful because he's used to having people around. So that means he's not so spooked when he sees new faces in public because he sees it all the time. He says he it also alleviates his symptoms. So sometimes he wears glasses with green tinted lenses when he's in crowds because green light helps. He said he wants other people to know, the fewer than 100 people suffering from this, that they can manage this. He said he came very close to having himself institutionalized. I can't even, for the life of me, if everybody looked like this, that would be wild. He does say, the research study, rather, doctor says, that a lot of people with this are misdiagnosed with mental health disorders instead of having some type of neurological connection. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Right. That must make sexy time fun. You're looking a little strange, honey. I don't know. John says, how do they know he's really seeing this and not just saying he's seeing this? I mean, I guess. I don't know. Murphy says the photo is disturbing. Okay, all right. We'll take the photo down. I just think this is so weird. Yeah, it is real. It is real. Absolutely. It's very, very creepy and very, very real. Okay. Photo gone, Murphy. Photo gone. It's safe. You can come back. We're okay. Thank you not only to Harry for the $5 super sticker, but to Spencer who comes in with a $5 super sticker. You guys are so nice. And we have Suzanne Trujillo Roy Balid with a $50 super sticker. Suzanne, that's really nice of you. You guys, I really appreciate it so much. I can't tell you that the messages of support that you guys want the show to continue, that you guys want us to want me to keep doing this, and that you would financially support the show. It's so important. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let us move on. We have some pretty good stories today, I have to say. We collectively, we as a unit, all right? Let's talk about this chunky gator. You know what? It's kind of rude. There's nothing wrong with this gator. He's just got a little extra to love. Little chunk, right? It's okay. Well, apparently it's causing some concern in the Florida neighborhood where he's been seen. People are a little concerned. What is he eating? I don't know. What's happening over here? Yeah. So he's a little fat. It's okay, right? Yes. The royal we. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this chunky gator is in Tampa, Florida. In honor of Friday Fabulous Florida, I should say he's in Temple Terrace, Florida. and residents are worried this gator could potentially cause harm to a passerby or get out of the fenced-in area where he's kept through a gaping hole in one of the gates. Some residents in this area say they've got to check every time they come out of the house. Like, what's going on? Where's that gator? The kids know there's a gator there, and they say they don't feed him. Somebody's feeding him because he's chunky, I have to tell you. His eyes are kind of pretty, though. He looks a little sweet, of course, until he's coming at you. But yeah, they say the kids don't feed him in the neighborhood. They don't even allow them to go near this fenced area. But pictures, as you can see here, show this massive alligator sprawled out in a pile of mulch. There's trash and debris littered around him as well. It's kind of a sad situation. Construction crews tell the reporters in the area that people have been feeding him, which is illegal and dangerous. Neighborhood residents say the gator's been there for a really long time. They don't know why he chose this spot to make his home. Florida Fish and Wildlife say they're aware of this reptile. They're looking into the incident. They say it is illegal to harass or kill an alligator without a permit. With a permit, it's fine. Without a permit, you got a problem. They also advise citizens not to bother or feed the animals. I don't know. I mean, he's making news because he's a chunky gator, but how sad that his habitat is mulch with garbage. Come on. There's video with this next story, and it's a little funny because, I mean, it's not funny if it's your dog. It's funny to us maybe, but not funny if it's your dog that's disobeying you over and over and over again. There's this dog that is making news for being incredibly disobedient. Bad dog. No. Here's a little video that we have to show you what happens when your dog really doesn't care what you have to say.
Buster has made a splash on the internet.
Buster! Come here. Come here. Come here, you little
with his lovable disobedience.
Come here. Come here.
A Florida resident who can't seem to leave the pool.
Be a good boy for once in your life.
Buster is only a bad dog when it comes to the pool.
He's not a rambunctious, crazy dog, except for whenever he wants to get in the pool.
Jennifer Henry posted 10 futile efforts.
Hey, are you ready to come in?
To get Buster out of the pool so she and her husband could make it to a dinner reservation.
Hey, that's with my towel. Don't you dare, Buster.
But hey, at least he tends to bring the towel back out of the pool. It was only when her husband used his I mean business voice.
Let's go, come on.
That Buster and their 14-year-old dog Scooby headed for the house, though Buster contemplated taking one more dip.
No, sir. Buster, get over here now.
You'll notice both dogs disobey.
Come here. Come here.
But only Buster gets busted.
He's the instigator. Scooby does not get in unless Buster gets in first.
Jennifer has used a net to try and retrieve the retriever. When she's really serious, she uses his full name.
Buster. Buster Henry. Buster.
The lab often wears swimming shoes because his paws get bloody from the unlined concrete. And to protect their 10-year-old son from Buster, his fans can't get enough. Love me some Buster.
He has brought so much joy to our family.
Even if Buster keeps busting her chops.
You were supposed to go potty, not swimming.
Ginny Mose, CNN, New York.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, unless you're her, in which case that's really frustrating. Buster, my dog will sit or lay down only if I have food in my hand or a treat in my hand to give her. That's it. So I understand the frustration there. I do. Let's talk about this guy. This guy is a two-headed snake, but it's actually conjoined. It was supposed to be twins that were conjoined. And this is what we get. The snake has undergone surgery in Missouri, not necessarily to remove one of its head, but because apparently there were other issues with it as well. And it was having some type of sneezing blood and they thought that they found that it had an issue with laying eggs. So there's some type of birth defect with this two-headed western rat snake named Tiger Lily. It was scheduled to leave the Missouri Department of Conservation's Powder Valley Nature Center this week. But again, after a feeding, they saw that it was having an issue with blood. And so they had to do some surgery. The veterinarians discovered that, again, she had some type of ovarian issue. So the surgery was done. It was successful. Now she's recovering off display at the Nature Center, and she'll remain there at this facility while she recovers. That should take about a month. And then I guess they put her back. I don't know if she's going back into the wild or not. The veterinarians say this snake is, again, a conjoined identical snake twins who failed to properly separate before hatching. Sad, but interesting to look at nonetheless. This poor little creature got his head stuck in a tire. This is a dog. Oh man, my heart just goes out to this tire dog, is what I've named the story. The New Jersey firefighters had to come out and rescue this dog. The dog was just curious, they say, and poked her head right through the rim of a discarded old tire and then got stuck. So the Franklin Volunteer Fire Department had to respond, along with the police in Franklin Township, to help Daisy, the dog, get her head out of the rim of this tire, which was at her home. They tried to remove it with soap and water, kind of make her slippery. That didn't work out. Finally, they had to use plasma cutters to remove the tire. Daisy wasn't injured, and she's doing well, but what a scary situation for her. I'm putting this in this animal section because, hey, Fluffy, here, little Fluffy. It's a fluffy beetle. A brand new species discovered. It is the fluffy longhorn beetle discovered in Australia. Usually we don't apply the term fluffy to insects, but some caterpillars are fluffy, some spiders, and some beetles do have longer fuzzy hairs from their legs. But this is a new kind of genus of fluffy longhorn beetle. It's in Australia. It was found by chance, a bit of a mistaken identity as well. A study on this newly discovered Excosta albopilosa, is what it's named, is published in the Australian Journal of Taxonomy for March 19th. Excostra, they call her, or it, was initially discovered by an entomologist while he and his partner were camping in the rainforests of Queensland, Australia. He initially thought this creature, less than an inch long, with long white and black hairs, was bird poop. And I could see that. It looks like that, right? He said, I was walking through the campsite at Binnaburra Lodge one morning, and something on a Lomandra leaf caught my eye. To my amazement, I saw the most extraordinary and fluffiest longhorn beetle that I had ever seen. It's interesting that the entomologist is the one that spots this thing. So after he gets home, he starts looking through books and science papers on the internet to find the name of this species, but he can't find it. Some photos posted to an Australasian Beatles Facebook group sparked a little bit of interest, but even the most seasoned researchers and entomologists were stumped on this one. And so, the Australian National Insect Collection in Canberra is officially confirming this beetle is not only a completely new species, but a completely new genus. So they selected the name Excostra for the genus name, which means from the camp. Its species name, albopilosa, means white and hairy. We don't know what the hairs are for yet, they say. The primary theory is that they make this insect look like it's been killed by an insect-killing fungus. It would possibly deter predators like birds from eating it, but until someone can find more specimens and study this species further, they won't be able to say why this species is so hairy-looking. The area where it was found has been really popular with entomologists for more than 100 years. And the entomologist that founds it often takes backpack trips to this park. But the chance of discovering this highlights how many unknown species are out there and how many may risk going extinct as well. The entomologist says insects are the most diverse group of animals on the planet. Also, he said the most underappreciated and understudied as well. The thought is, this is crazy. I mean, how long have we been coexisting with these things? There may be 5.5 million insect species worldwide, and only 1/5 of those have been named or described. A lot more stories for me, let me tell you. This one is extinct. This is a creepy, I think it's creepy, dolphin fossil that was found in Peru. Enormous as well. This river dolphin, apparently, some river dolphins, I should say, live and eat in fresh water, and they're best known for being kind of pinkish in color. The paleontologist uncovered this fossilized skull that belongs to a 16-million-year-old extinct river dolphin species in Peru named Pabanista yacaruna. It grew to be about 10 or 11 feet long. It's the largest known species of river dolphin known to science. Pabanista, described in this study in the Journal of Science Advances, March 20th, a mythical aquatic people, the Yacaruna, the legends say that they inhabit underwater cities in the Amazon basin, and they're similar to the god Neptune in Greek mythology. That's what it was named for. The fossilized skull was found in the Peruvian Amazon and belongs to the group Platanosoida. This group was a common animal. I'm just going to say it like with confidence, like that's how it's supposed to be said. This group was a common animal in the Earth's oceans between 24 and 16 million years ago. They think their primarily saltwater-dwelling ancestors invaded the prey-rich freshwater ecosystems of the early Amazon and then learned to adapt to this new environment. The Peruvian Amazonia looked very different from what it is today, they say, and much of it was covered by a large system of lakes and swamp called Pebas. This landscape stretched across present-day Colombia, Ecuador, Bolivia, Peru, and Brazil, and it included a variety of ecosystems. So interesting. So this fossil is found, and again, they say it's the most enormous fossilized river dolphin skull that they have ever uncovered. It has happened. They have now the very first patient with the Neuralink implant. Oop, that's the wrong one. I find it fascinating and also disturbing as well. And we've talked a lot about this Neuralink implant. It's supposed to be used to possibly help people overcome spinal injuries or brainstem injuries. But now we have the first human patient reportedly to receive Neuralink's wireless brain computer interface. And they were demonstrating the capabilities. They live streamed it on X. Of course, it's a Musk company, Neuralink, to another Musk company, X. And what they show is this volunteer, this person who volunteered to have this implant, he's a 29-year-old man from Texas named Noland Arbaugh, who had dislocated his C4 and C5 vertebra during a diving accident in 2016. And he was permanently paralyzed from right below the shoulders down. During the live stream, he appears to be playing online chess as his Neuralink implant translates his brain activity into actionable computer inputs because he can't move his hands to do it, right? Kind of creepy. We'll see if I can show you the video. I mean, I don't know what this says about the success of Neuralink. Maybe for this person, it's working out. I don't know.
All right, we should be streaming live here. Hello, world. How's it going out there? My name is Bliss, and I'm an engineer at Neuralink. And I'd like to introduce you to the first ever user of the Neuralink device. And I think you're my only telekinetic friend that I have.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, not many more of those out there. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Nolan Arbaugh. I'm 29 years old. About 8 years ago, I was in kind of a freak diving accident and dislocated my C4, C5. So I'm a complete quadriplegic. So I'm paralyzed from below the shoulders. I have no sensation or movement below my level of injury, so below my shoulders. Yeah, that about covers it, right?
Do you want to introduce some of your dogs here? Let me flip
the camera
absolutely.
So you guys can see.
Oh. Yeah, dogs all over the place.
Yeah, that's Montana. The one walking by is Grace. Gracie.
Gracie, come here.
Hi, Grace.
How's it going, Gracie? Yeah. All right.
This is what people did.
Yeah, they're just here for the dogs. All right, yeah.
The last few years, especially not like this. I had to use like a mouth stick and stuff, but now it's all being done with my brain. If y'all can see the cursor moving around the screen. That's all me, y'all. It's pretty cool, huh?
Actually, can you pause the song just for the audio coming through? And that was also done with your brain?
Yep. It's all brain power up there.
Can you explain a little bit just to people who maybe don't have any context on this field or what's going on here? Yep. How are you able to actually move the cursor?
Yeah, so we started out with trying out a few different things. We basically went from what we call kind of differentiating like imagined movement versus attempted movement. So a lot of what we started out with was attempting to move. So I would attempt to move, say, my right hand, left, right, forward, back. And from there, I think it just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen and it would move where I wanted it to, which was such a wild experience.
This guy wants to know if you feel like a wizard.
Yeah, right.
So the video goes on and on. It's a 10-minute long video and I won't show it all to you here. Spencer's calling it a bad infomercial, right? Murphy says, not a cop-out. Sometimes situations are overwhelming. People need to make changes. Oh, I think we're talking about, how we've lost John Daly on the show. Yeah, it's true. Everything changes, as my friend Luis in the chat has told me. And so, we embrace the change and what people have to do, and we move on from it. Jim says, I'm going to say it very soon. Porn can be experienced in your brain. Spencer thinks the engineer is a little too jazzed. I mean, I guess if you've been working on this and it's your life's work, that you would be excited about how it would play out. But pretty interesting. All right, let's take a look at this story about national parks with the dirtiest air. And what a bummer that some of the winners, if you can call them winners, at the top of this list are here in California. It's unfortunate. The national parks with the dirtiest air, there are four of them in California on this new list. And unfortunately, this new air and climate report from the National Parks Conservation Association finds Sequoia Kings Canyon, Joshua Tree, Mojave, and Yosemite struggle with unhealthy air more than any other parks in the country. The report examining three air quality categories, unhealthy air, harm to nature and hazy skies, and also climate change related threats of drought, sea level rise, and wildfires and invasive species. That from SF Gate. They say that here in California, we've got some of the most scenic and some of the most appreciated national parks, but also that has played a role in the health of the environment of these parks as well. So the pollution comes from a lot of vehicles, industrial sources as well, petroleum refineries or cement plants in the area. In particular, Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks in the Sierra Nevada that make up over 1,300 square miles and include landmarks like Mount Whitney and the General Sherman Tree, rank as having the unhealthiest park air in the country. They say unhealthy ozone concentrations and the effect from drought and wildfires all contribute to poor air quality in these parks. Tulare County, the agricultural region where both of these parks, Sequoia and Kings Canyon, are located, also has some of the worst air quality in the state. Tulare ranks as having the fourth worst air quality in California, and they got an F grade in the American Lung Association's most recent State of the Air report. San Bernardino County, where Joshua Tree National Park is located, ranked as the worst in the state with the highest average of high ozone level days recorded. So a lot of this comes from vehicle emissions, industrial operations, agricultural activities in the region, like the San Joaquin Valley of California, which is one of the most polluted in the nation, where residents are frequently exposed to this unhealthy air. Yuck. And what a bummer to have such beautiful parks and then go there and, you know, have to choke down that air. Mm-mm. Another lottery story, especially on this day where our Powerball and Mega Millions jackpots are on the rise. This lady, she keeps winning. She can't not win, apparently. I mean, come on. Yeah. She is in Virginia, and this is her second time with a big old check, this one for $1 million. Can you imagine? I can't imagine winning once, let alone twice. The $1 million jackpot came from a scratch-off ticket 3 years after this woman collected a $100,000 lottery prize. She just kept playing. Her name is Gayla Guichard. She's of Smithfield. And she tells Virginia lottery officials she bought this Virginia Million scratch-off ticket at the Raceway Station in the Isle of Wight County. And what a scene. When she scratched off this $1 million prize, she said she started screaming, and then everyone started screaming. She said the ruckus caused people to rush into the store from outside to ask what's wrong. They said nothing, and then everybody got really quiet. As she previously won $100,000 from the Virginia New Year's Millionaire Raffle back in 2021, she didn't say whether she has any plans, what she wants to do with this $1 million, but lucky lady twice to hit that twice. In Disneyland, there's a new way to enjoy the fireworks. Disneyland putting out this press release that you can now enjoy the fireworks display in a whole new way at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and it's called Fire of the Rising Moons. And they say it's an experience that showcases different views of Disneyland. The show can be experienced from multiple areas at the Star Wars land, including the Black Spire Spaceport and the Speeder Garage. And they're going to have something special as well. So if you are in the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land, you'll be able to hear music, galactic music, from composer John Williams, the Star Wars film scores. The Fire of the Rising Moon show will play on select nights starting on April 5th, which also marks the beginning of the season of the Force celebration at Disneyland, which runs until June 2nd. And that includes the return of Hyperspace Mountain. They'll have all types of themed foods and merchandise and more. It does look otherworldly when, if you look at it from that perspective, kind of cool. The fireworks at the end of the evening at Disneyland, kind of one of my favorite parts of going there, to just take a moment, sit with your family and watch the fireworks. It's really nice. Good news. We're all saved. If the asteroid comes, it looks like there's something we can actually do about it. At least that's according to NASA. They had this asteroid blaster turned into a space rock. It turned a space rock into what they call an oblong watermelon. It's a DART mission that made this dimorphous shape a little bit more askew. Yeah. They called it a picture-perfect test. The double asteroid redirection test, or DART, successfully smashed this car-sized spacecraft into an asteroid. It happened in September. The mission showed that a spacecraft could successfully deflect a hazardous space rock if it were ever to be heading for Earth, even though the odds of this type of cataclysmic event happening are pretty low. DART managed to change the orbit of the asteroid, and now scientists found this impact also changed the asteroid's shape. This can all be found in a study published in the Planetary Science Journal. It targeted, DART, this 560-foot-wide asteroid that they named Dimorphos, which orbits a larger near-Earth asteroid called Didymos. Before impact, Dimorphos had generally the symmetrical oblate spheroid shape. But when DART made impact, it got a little more interesting. The Dimorphos orbit is no longer circular. Now it went from a relatively symmetrical object to a triaxial ellipsoid, like an oblong watermelon. So it totally changed the shape of this asteroid. The good news with all this is it looks like if something were barreling toward us, that we could send something up there and knock into it, change the shape of it, and maybe change the trajectory of it. I'm all for that. I don't want to be hit by an asteroid. So, speaking of all things sci-fi, I don't know if you know who this man is. His name is Werner Vinge, and he's pretty famous, especially in the world of sci-fi, to the point that he came up with something, technological singularity. He's credited with writing about this. It has, it's the technological singularity is the moment, think of it like, remember Skynet in the movies? That's the moment Skynet becomes self-aware. Technological singularity. The moment technology, specifically AI, surpasses the human brain and we no longer understand or can control the direction that it takes. There are estimates that we will reach this milestone, if you want to call it a milestone, sometime around the year 2045. So this is pretty big ideas from this sci-fi writer. He's very well known, especially by folks in tech. Werner Vinge has died at the age of 79. He influenced generations of writers and tech industry leaders as well. The news of his passing was posted on Facebook from author and friend David Brin. Werner Vinge suffered complications from Parkinson's disease. The author that posted about his death, David Brin, said Werner enthralled millions with tales of plausible tomorrow, made all the more vivid by his polymath masteries of language, drama, characters, and the implications of science. Some of his classics, A Fire Upon the Deep and Rainbow's End. Vinge also taught math and computer science at San Diego State University. He retired in 2000 to focus more on his writing, but he will forever be known for this whole concept of technological singularity. We'll probably hear more about it when, unfortunately, we reach that point. Something a little lighter. Lenny Kravitz, it seems, really likes Channing Tatum, who is engaged. I don't know if they're engaged or just dating his daughter. Lenny Kravitz describing Channing Tatum as soulful. And he is gushing over, yes, Tatum is engaged to his daughter, actress Zoe Kravitz. He is describing Lenny Kravitz, his future son-in-law, as sweet. And he is welcoming him into their family. He says he's a great guy. We get along really well. We have our own relationship as well. We hang out. We talk. He said he's a very soulful human being. He was raised well. He has manners and he has class. So it's nice to see good relationships for a change. You know, that's lovely. Did you see this story about Celine Dion? You know, she's suffering from the stiff person syndrome, which is really sad. But now she's gone to a sporting event. She was well enough to go to a sporting event with her two sons. And she appeared on screen just for a few minutes at this Boston Bruins game. And fans were delighted when they saw her.
Guys. And yeah. Celine Dion's in the building. By the way, I'm a huge super fan. Love her. I love that she's singing along. I wish I could sing.
So I can't play a lot of the music, but it's nice to see her singing along and getting to be there with her sons and looking like she's having some enjoyment in life. She said she's trying to get back to performing, so I hope that she's successful in doing that, because it's, you know, I hate to see her meet a sad end in this way. Okay, let's talk about Ben Folds. You know Ben Folds 5? Ben Folds? He's getting divorced. And it's for the fifth time. He's been married lots of times, 5 times. That didn't work out, he said. And that's what he said. It just didn't work out of the previous marriages. He's divorcing for the fifth time, ending his marriage with Emma Sandel. Remember his song Brick? That was back in 1997. So he had that top 20 Billboard radio play chart song. He's finalizing his divorce with her and citing irreconcilable differences. He's ordered to pay her $650,000 in monthly installments of $27,000 a month over the next 2 years, plus give her about $138,000 in cash. So she also gets the Nashville home. So that's what's going on with Ben Folds, unfortunately. Maybe after the fifth marriage, I don't know. It's time to pack. You're going to go broke, my friend. You're going to go broke. Stop doing it. Susan Sarandon is saying Hollywood has not done well enough in this cleanup after the Harvey Weinstein scandal. She said the people who facilitated the Harvey Weinsteins of the world continue to work in show business, and there's a lot more cleaning up to do. She says Hollywood hasn't fully reckoned with the Me Too movement. She was at a panel event with Mira Sorvino and Gina Davis on Sunday in Connecticut, where she spoke about Harvey Weinstein, who, by the way, has been sentenced to 23 years in prison for committing criminal sex acts against a production assistant, an aspiring actor as well, and sentenced to an additional 16 years for the sexual assault of an actor and a model in a hotel. But Sarandon said, in the wake of the Weinstein scandal, those who have enabled abusers continue to work in show business. And here's her quote. I don't think we've done the cleanup afterwards that we should be doing. She said, I don't think people talk enough about the people who facilitated the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, that they are still functioning and that they are still equally responsible. And she said, it's very confusing to be a young girl in Hollywood and realize executives are checking on your viability according to how sexy you are. She said, you do know that, right? You do know there's something going on. They call it a chemistry thing or whatever they want to call it, but that's part of what you're bringing to the table. Yeah. She said, when I got Mira Sorvino at the same event said, when I got married and became a mother, my family is everything. And I don't see my worth as being a famous actress. I see my worth as being a good person. But they all agree they've got a lot more work to do when it comes to what's going on in show business and women in show business as well. Speaking of women's issues, fertility rates are expected to decline. They're already on the decline. But in the decades ahead, there's a new study that projects global fertility rates, which have been declining in all countries since the 1950s, will continue to plummet through the end of the century. And that will create this demographic shift. So the fertility rate is the average number of children born to a woman in her lifetime. And according to CNN, the number has gone from 4.84 in 1950 to 2.23 in 2021. And by 2100, it's expected to drop to 1.59. This new analysis, based on the Global Burden of Diseases, Injuries, and Risk Factors Study 2021, led by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington, and published Wednesday in the journal Lancet, Researchers say what we are experiencing now and have been experiencing for decades is something we have not seen before in human history, which is a large-scale, cross-national, cross-cultural shift toward preferring and having smaller families. The study, or the author, 8 billion and counting, how sex, death, and migration shape our world. She was not involved with the research, but that's what she's saying. We've never seen anything like this. It's the first time in human history that our population has taken a downturn and is expected to keep on doing so. Researchers that were involved in the study say there are a lot of reasons for this, including more opportunities for women in education and employment, better access to contraception and reproductive health services. When we get to choose, we choose maybe one or two, not 6 to 13, right? Yeah. And I don't see that as a bad thing. For a while, weren't we overpopulating the planet? Look at the filth we leave behind. Maybe it's a better thing if we decrease our footprint a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I don't see it as a bad thing unless what you're talking about, the reason for infertility, has anything to do with making the planet dirty and full of a toxic soup that we're all breathing in and all the microplastics and all of these things. If that's affecting our fertility, well, then that's also affecting our choices, and that's something we have to do. Economic factors such as the direct cost of raising children, the perceived risk of death to children, and changing values on gender equality and self-fulfillment, all forces, according to the researchers, that may contribute to declining fertility rates. The relative contribution of these factors varies by time and by country. So, to maintain what we've got right now, a stable population, countries need a total fertility rate of 2.1 children per woman, right? Enough to replace you and your partner, the replacement level. When the fertility rate falls below the replacement level, obviously, the population begins to shrink. A new analysis estimates 46% of countries had a fertility rate below the replacement level in 2021, and that number is set to increase to 97% by the year 2100, meaning the population of almost all countries in the world will be declining by the end of the century. So, there you have it. That's what's happening to humanity. Let us talk about this, though. Let's take a little trip to Thanda. No, not really. We can't afford it. But we can dream, I think. We can. The World Travel Awards has named Thanda Island the world's leading exclusive private island for the last 8 years. Costs kind of a lot to stay here. $33,000 a night. This private island inspired by the Kennedys, because the hotel or the place to stay on this island is based on a Kennedy's home, became a beacon for sustainable tourism, which is a good thing. So Thanda Island is really just a speck of sand, they call it, off the Tanzanian coast. They only have room for a handful of guests, but this luxury estate, which has to be rented in its entirety. So when you stay there, you're renting the island. The prices start at 33 grand a night, and you have to share it with all of Mother Nature's most majestic creatures, including the largest fish in the sea, the whale shark, which is known to frequent the waters around this area. It's about a 30-minute chopper ride from Tanzania's biggest city, Dar es Salaam. It sits amid a private marine reserve with a very, very strenuous conservation and restoration program. They're already seeing the rewards, and visitors get involved in it as well. Thanda Island Hotel has been in operation since 2016. The entrepreneurs are from Sweden, Dan and Kristen Olofsson. They said they wanted to create the ultimate escape, which explains the multi-generational families and groups of friends that are the island's typical guests. Most people, get this, stay for 5 to 8 nights. Okay, it's $33,000 a night. These are people that aren't worried about cash. But here's what it looks like. Look at that. It's really pretty there. And so much nature happening as well, all around this island. So the island's main villa was designed with an inspiration by the Kennedy's family beach house in the United States. That's this. So that's that was the inspiration for the hotel there on the island. The island strives to be as self-sufficient as possible with seawater desalination plants on site, rainwater harvesting, powered by the largest off-grid solar farm in Tanzania. Organic waste is turned into compost. But that's only part of why people are going there. Look at this little baby turtle. A lot of people that are very, very wealthy go to this island and they take part in the conservation efforts here. Guests have exclusive use of the beaches and the Mafia Island Marine Park during the day and the Shungimibili Island Marine Reserve. Activities include jet skiing, jet boarding, kayaking, sailing, windsurfing, kite surfing, diving, snorkeling, swimming with the whale sharks, the humpback whales, black tiff reef sharks are a quick boat ride away. They also, and that's why I have the picture of the turtle here, have this protected turtle nesting area. 5 different turtle species live within this area with the green turtles hatching. Much of the work, though, takes place at sea. So a lot of people go out, they get involved in helping clip the corals into the seabed, giving them places to grow, and other conservation efforts as well. So that's what we have today on the After Party Live. Just a little look, a little peek into the lifestyles of the rich in this $33,000 a night, beautiful Thanda Island. Here's another one for you. Dogs. There's a story that says dogs may picture objects in their minds similarly to people. So that when a dog maybe fetches a ball, they say it's hard to know what's actually going on. Dogs do understand, and we know this, to tone of voice and the syllables of words and also hand motions and body language. But behavioral studies have also offered some clues, and new research brings evidence that dogs really do grasp the meaning behind words. They show, via neural activity, they can differentiate between words for different objects, and they're even surprised when presented with words and objects that don't match up. A team of neuroscientists and animal behavior researchers use non-invasive electroencephalograms testing to measure electrical pulses inside the dogs of the brains of 27 pet dogs during this experiment published in the current Biology Journal. And they found electrical impulse patterns similar to a known signal in humans. The findings, they think, say canine brains are complex in language. They were interested in whether dogs understand words the way humans do. And they say, it looks like it. It looks like they do. If we want to understand what's common across humans and animals, they need to have more types of data like this. So, kind of interesting. The bigger surprise, the bigger the signal. People have internal reference for what words mean or the ability to picture the object inside of our mind's eye from memory. Before this study, they said it was unclear if other animals share the capacity to imagine something that's not there just from the associated sound, right? So when I say cat, you see the, unless you're looking at one, you see a cat in your mind's eye. You know what that means. The assessment compared the readings from the EEG readings from the subject that was told a word or phrase and then shown a corresponding object or that the object didn't match the description. And that, they think, means dogs see something in their mind's eye and were surprised when the words didn't match up. I think that's so interesting. Lastly, let's talk about the meta dog. Speaking of dogs, maybe you don't want the vet bill. Maybe you don't want to have to pick up poop off the living room floor. You know, things happen with dogs. Charlotte, I'm talking to you specifically. This Chinese company has a dog robot, a companion robo dog. and it barks and it wags its tail. It only has 12 hours of battery life, so, you know, don't count on it too much. They think as people age that this could become more beneficial because people are going to be more isolated. I will say that the company responsible for this is Chinese-based. So you wonder, is your Chinese companion robo-dog spying on you? I don't know. Elephant Robotics is the name of this country. That is a company. God, can I speak? Elephant Robotics is the name of this company that is introducing the MetaDog Robotic Companion. It's inspired by Husky and Shiba Inu breeds. It responds to touch and sound. It also responds to 30 voice commands. This isn't like Buster. This one will actually do what you say. It responds to its owner with barks, howls, head and eye movement. And between charges, it's got 12 hours of battery life. So there you go. A perfect option for people who want a dog but can't really have one for various reasons. Maybe they have allergies. Maybe they have some type of constraint with their living arrangement. Maybe they're lonely. And that could be a good option for people that are feeling a little bit lonely and can't have a pet. Companion robots, enhanced with artificial intelligence, they say, could serve an aging and increasingly isolated population. Professors of psychiatry at Duke also say until society prioritizes social connectedness and elder care, robots could be a solution for the millions of isolated people who right now have no other solutions. We're going to see newer models of robots that could provide social connections, all types of things. The concept of emotionally intelligent machines, not new. There was one called Now, which was a humanoid robot developed by European researchers that was able to detect emotions, recognize body and facial cues, and even remember their previous interactions with people. But this little MetaDog is launching commercially, and they're predicting this is going to be the next big disruptive innovation that will kickstart economic growth, like computers, smartphones, electric vehicles, that everyone is going to want a robotic pet. I don't want this robotic pet. Do you want this robotic pet? I don't think so. Let's go to the chat to see what you guys have to say. Where do you plug the charger in? They didn't say that. But one can only imagine. Lori says, I want a dog that I don't have to walk and I don't have to feel guilty about having in a small apartment. I bet it's too much money. Walter wants to know if it can be hacked. Mindy says, why would they want to spy on an old lady in a nursing home? I don't know. Never trust the CCP. Robo dog, don't spy on me, okay? Okay? Murphy doesn't want a fake dog. Louis says it looks a little creepy. Yeah. Mindy wants one. All right. I mean, I think we really have to make sure it's not spying on you, that all the information being said in your home isn't being fed back to somebody. It could be okay for people. I worry that there's a lot of, and at this point, and I've been reading about full animal shelters. There are a lot of animal shelters that are packed to the gills with dogs. At one point in San Francisco, they were saying, don't bring your dog and surrender them to the shelter right now. If you want to do that, give us a minute to try to get rid of the dogs that we have or rehome the dogs that we have. So I worry that the companion robo dog means that real animals might not be adopted at the rates that we need them to be adopted. I don't know how much it is. I love that. Where do you plug the charger in? That's it. That's the After Party Live for today. A lot of people to thank for supporting this show. I'm very, very grateful, again, for all the messages of support to ongoing contributors, Annie K, Joe F, Nancy B, Deidre L, aloha, on your way to Hawaii, and are you probably there by now, and Robin F as well. Thank you guys for supporting the After Party Live. And to people that have jumped in with super stickers and super chats today. That's Harry with a $5 super sticker. That's Spencer with a $5. And Suzanne with a generous $50 as well. You guys giving of your own funds to help support the show and keep it going. Really appreciated. I know it's not going to be the same. And it may change in different ways. This is the first week solo, so there's a lot of things to still consider and decisions to be made. But again, thank you for the words of support and the way that you still show up and hang out. Please click the like button if you could. If you haven't subscribed to the show, that would be helpful as well. And share the show if you can. Let's grow it and make it so that this is a sustainable show that we can keep on having and I can keep on doing. I hope you guys have a really, really good weekend. On Monday, on the Mark Thompson Show, a really interesting guest coming up. A man that knows everything about the IED explosions in different countries and is working to get people that have been affected by that compensated, has co-authored a new book. So we will have that on the show, on the Mark Thompson Show. And of course, it's True Crime Corner as well. An interesting guest will be featured regarding Jeffrey Dahmer. Luis with a $5 super sticker coming in right at the end. Thank you so much. And thank you. Oh, Murphy throwing in a $5 super sticker. You guys, so nice to me. I really appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your support of the show and for making me feel like I can do this by myself. You guys are super awesome. But for now, we'll say goodbye, and I hope you guys have a really good weekend. It's supposed to be rainy with some thunderstorms, so stay safe out there. But as far as today, I hope you make it a really good one and a really good weekend. Bye, everybody.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.